Short disclaimer. This podcast is in no way affiliated with the Stars production or Diana Gabaldon. All views expressed are solely our own. Welcome to the Outlander podcast,
where the men are kilted,
the women are winsome,
and the whiskey is neat.
Welcome to episode 60 of the Outlander podcast. I'm Ginger.
And I'm Summer, and we are in love with all things Outlander. So announcements this week. We got some new images from Outlander Stars. One, we got a picture of our wool walkers from the Rent episode. All in their finery. Looks like four of them. I don't know who they are, but they all look very authentic. Definitely. And they also gave us another lovely shot of Sam and Kachina on horseback together from, I believe this is the first episode, no, second episode, when they arrived at Castle Leoc together. But they're also covered in the costume puffy coat. But they're very adorable together. We got some interesting news this week. It looks like Ireland is definitely getting Outlander starting, I believe, October 21st at 11 p.m. So yay, Ireland! Welcome to the Outlander family.
Yay, Katrina's family can watch!
We also found out that Sky and Fox TV Italy are working to bring Outlander to Italy. There's no date yet, but it is a work in progress, but that will be good news for Italy
and
fans.
And who did that come from?
That came from Outlander Italian fans, so at Outlander Italy on Twitter.
On Twitter, that's correct.
Was that a test?
Did I just get
an A+? Did I get a gold star? Diana posted this week that there is going to be a new, total and complete German translation of the first three novels. Now, I didn't know this, but apparently when they originally translated them, they cut giant chunks of it out.
And that was shocking to me because I speak German and I read German. I'm fluent, but I've never read the German books, even though the first book I had on my wall or on my bookshelf, I had Outlander, Feuer und Stein, in German. But I hadn't read it, and I literally think I had it on my thing for 2 or 4 years, but that's beside the point. So apparently, this is not just in the Spanish translation, because I have spoken with Gisela, who is with Outlander Spain, Outlander en Español, on Twitter and on Facebook, and she says that, and not just her, but everyone who knows about it, has confirmed that, yes, they wanted so badly to have a new translation. I think, I don't know, it was a Random House, but some publishing house in Spain is now, they confirmed that, yes, they were going to do a new translation. I did not, because, yeah, it wasn't just not translated well. I mean, that's one thing. When you chop out giant sections, unfortunately, with Diana's books, one thing that may be mentioned once can come back three books later, and you're clueless. So this is a problem in anything, especially because I guess it was abridged, and I wonder if they even
mentioned
called
that it was
abridged. Yeah. So I only heard about this being consistent with the Spanish translation. Now that it makes me think, holy monkey, what other translations are out there that people don't even know that there are chunks missing? So German, and the German thing really, really surprises me because, number one, I didn't know. I truly, honestly didn't know that Barbara Schnell did not do every single book, but I guess she came in later in the game, but now she is going to be doing the first three books. So Barbara, it looks like you have job security.
There you go.
You're going to be needed. And of course on her new book as well, on the one that Diana is working on. Outside of the US, the German fans are some of the most
rabid
and vociferous and hardcore, again, in a very good way. And the German fans that I've met in person and online are so in love with these books, and I am shocked, and I'm not, you know, this is not blame, this is just like utter, I wonder if they knew, I mean, seriously, and if they have been talking about it for 10 or 15 years, however long those have been out, then it's on me for not even knowing, but I never knew what do you do, say, hi, are you a fan of the books? Yeah, so am I, great, how'd you like book one? Well, if you don't know that there's something, we're not going to go point for point and compare things, you just talk about the books and the things that you liked. I mean, how do you know to ask someone if their book had chunks missing? You can't. What do you know? What do you ask?
Well, I'm going to ask it now.
Oh, gosh. But that's just scary to me. But anyway, it goes back to, yeah, I will never read an abridgment of anything.
No, it's a waste of time. And we also found out from
a fan
in China.
In Taiwan.
Okay, that's very more specific than I knew. From a fan in Taiwan that Dragonfly and Amber is about to be published in Chinese in February of 2015. I didn't realize they didn't already have it. I mean, I guess I should have known.
She sent us some beautiful... Remember those beautiful covers?
I do remember.
They were from the Chinese version, and I just thought it was... I for some reason, thought it was the first two books, but I guess it was just the first book. But it was... Oh, my gosh. Seriously, some of the most... I think the most beautiful cover of Outlander that we've seen has been... that one that Wei Qiye showed us. So thank you again. And we look forward to getting that picture, which you have promised, in February or in early 2015.
So that is announcements for this week.
On to our read-along. We are on chapter 2, entitled The Plot Thickens. And boy, does it.
Yes, it does. We are still in Inverness, I think. Still in 1968.
Well, he's not just in Inverness. He does go to Edinburgh.
Yes, but the chapter opens in Inverness, and most of it takes place in Inverness. So we did have a few readers, listeners, submit some comments. And a very nice comment that Teresa sent us was that, I am two chapters into my second reading of Dragonfly and Amber, and I think I have realized the crux of Diana Gabaldon's writings overall and why they resonate so deeply with me. I believe that her stories are about the presence of God in our lives. And Teresa, you know, especially with Outlander, I would absolutely agree that it had a strong... I would say her writing, especially in that novel, is strongly influenced by her faith. And I don't think it's too far off to say that her writing in general is influenced by her faith. But I think... as her faith is so important to her, or we believe it is important to her, anyone else with something that is important to them in their life will obviously influence their writing. So Roger has been studying 12 pages of notes, or dang, and he's just confused. It hasn't really helped him too much, and he found only 3 of the names from Claire's list among those who'd died. As he's getting back into his car, Diana writes about his lanky frame. Somehow I'd not pictured him as lanky. Tall, yes. Kind of a, not necessarily, not a big beefcake, but I just didn't have a lanky Roger in mind.
Well, you have to remember he's a studious historian like Frank to a degree. He's not the strapping Scotsman that Jamie is.
Who's Jamie again?
Shush. He's not one of the strapping Scots that we are familiar with the first book. He is back to... He's more built... More like Frank, actually, at this point. He's studious. He's a book reader, book learner. He spends his time in a classroom teaching. He's not outside moving hay bales and tending to horses.
Say my name.
I will not.
You do all the time, girlfriend. Okay. So while he only found a few of the names among the list of those who'd died, he found all of them were on another list. The complete list had shown up as part of the Master of Lovett's regiment, quote, sent late in the campaign to fulfill a promise of support made to the Stuarts by Simon Fraser, Lord Lovett. But she'd insisted that they'd come from Broch Tuara, a.k.a. Lallybroch, as Connie reminds us, and that they had been with the army since Prestonpins. He was confused, Roger, as to why men from an entirely different state, who'd not given Fraser an oath, would have been under his command. He knew he'd been called the Old Fox. Then he remembered he'd been asked to find the ones that didn't cark at Culloden, and I had a feeling I knew what that likely meant, and it did. It's a term that meant to die. We learn of the complete and utter confusion.
Yeah, okay, that Kark line that you mentioned.
Yeah.
That whole, like, phrase made me laugh because at the beginning of it, he goes, hold on, cock. He calls himself a cock. I was like, really?
Cock, cock. Oh, it's all in one day.
I was like, in one sentence we have...
That and that, yes.
Calling himself a Kark and then talking about carking it.
So we learn of the complete and utter confusion it is to do the type of research Roger is trying to do. The names of the Highlanders alone... can be extremely confusing. Like, very, very common names, people using this different names, or the name is getting incorrectly attributed, and many of the lairds didn't survive, so people who were naming those who had made it home or who didn't make it home, whichever way they did it, I mean, it's by memory. It's not necessarily by, you know, it basically wasn't necessarily correct. And even if it was correct, then the names were so common, you didn't always have the correct name for the correct person, or you couldn't differentiate them very easily.
Well, we didn't have social security numbers like we do now. They didn't have social security numbers. They didn't have...
I think it's NI numbers.
Okay, I'm an American. Let's
I just, get it.
You know... acknowledge that now and move on. My point is they didn't have a tracking system to track individuals like we do now. So it's not surprising that when you just are given a name, it makes it harder. I mean, as anyone who has tried to search their own genealogy, that stuff is tricky. It's tricky because you'll put in, and I've spent a lot of time on Ancestry.com recently. Obviously, you start with you and then you work your way back. And things get harder the farther you get away because the people you know. But the farther you get back, you're like, I'm assuming so-and-so's grandfather's name was John. But then John Smith, there's like 300 John Smiths. And then you narrow that down. Well, 50 of those John Smiths were also born in Georgia. And then you narrow that down. Well, 50 of those John Smiths born in Georgia were born in April. And then you narrow it down from that. So it's actually quite difficult and a little frustrating. So I totally understand
and
what he's doing.
He didn't have
Ancestry.com.
He wasn't doing genealogy, but he didn't have the internet.
No, but it's kind of the same thing is what it's I'm saying. It's the same. They don't, it's not as hard as it was for me today on Ancestry.com. I can imagine that it was 100 times more difficult to do it the way that he was doing it, driving around.
We learned that the Frasers had been loyal and had suffered because of it. So he wants to go update Claire and let her know as far as he'd gotten, and to bask, quote, for a few moments in the presence of Brianna Randall. But he smartly decides to continue. He needed more information. Diana writes, and he wasn't at all sure that Claire was the person to provide it. He couldn't imagine why she should commission him to do this project and interfere with its completion by giving him inaccurate information. We revisit the whiskey. He's positive she'd spilled it on purpose. He understands that she didn't want him to invite Brianna to Broch Tuorach. Or was it to keep him away from there entirely? He knew she was keeping something from him. He'd stop were it not for Brianna and his curiosity. He would stop the entire project if it weren't for his developing something for Brianna and his curiosity. So he heads for the railroad station. He goes to visit the curator in charge of the Stewart papers, a friend of the Reverend's. As he's looking through all of this, his first clue to start with is the man whom these men were all under, James Frasers of Broch Tuorach. He seemed a link between the Broch and the Frasers of Lovett, but he was not on Claire's list. Do 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 do. Okay, that was a really, really major.
I think you meant do 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 do.
Yes.
You failed at the Twilight Zone theme song.
I don't even know what I was trying to hum or do.
It was so not the Twilight Zone.
I know.
But I felt like I was on the Twilight Zone listening.
He spent the night in Edinburgh and returns to Inverness and then goes to Broch Morda near Broch Tuorach. It was now an enormous pile of stone. The name means north-facing tower. We hear this again. And Connie reminds us, once again, as an outlander, we wonder how a round tower can be called in Gaelic a north-facing tower.
There may have been a window facing north.
That's what I always thought.
That's or the door facing north. That's what I assumed. There had to be some sort of a battlement or something that faced the north. There is always a way.
So the manor house, which is Lallybroch, right?
Of course.
Is also in ruins. There was an estate agent's sign. I seem to have forgotten this, even though I read this a few times, and it's interesting. So basically,
remember that for future books.
Yeah. But it's for sale, right? Or something.
Are all ruins for sale in Scotland? I mean, is that a given? If it's a ruin, you can buy it?
The house was abandoned and dangerous. He did not go in. But the name Fraser is carved into the lintel. And most of the tomb...
What's a
lintel? It's the something something that's just above the door.
That's what I thought.
And most of the tombstones also had the name Fraser on them. The old church was knocked down. An old farmer advises him that parish records might be at a museum in Fort William or in Inverness. His trip to Edinburgh, all he'd done was eliminate the three names. They hadn't come from the Broch Tuorach group. The Stewart papers took up three rooms plus lots of boxes, so he couldn't search everything. Documents had mentioned Simon Fraser the Younger, the old fox's son, as the commander, but no mention of James Fraser. There was mention of a James Fraser in other communiques, but nothing to distinguish him from others. Or as the Broch Tuorach Fraser. In one spot, though, there had been a James Fraser listed with additional middle names, but hadn't mentioned any of his men. I think it's interesting that he doesn't tell us what the names are.
Well, there's more interesting things to come.
He thinks he may as well go to the old kirkyard before heading back.
Might as well. He's
and
there.
He never tells us at this point, or in this chapter, what he finds. But that's more info for Diana to give us later. The next day, tea at the manse and an update. He found several names, but not yet any who'd for sure died at Culloden. Claire, he sees, is standing quite still and holding on to the back of the chair, with a look on her face that is like she'd forgotten where she was. When he says something about the Frasers being in the thick of the fight, Claire says, "I know." He realizes her voice has excitement in it. "What if they didn't die at Culloden?" she asks. He describes the breakdown. 2 on a ship's roll going to America, 4 died of natural causes, 1 was listed in a parish register, but not in the same parish that he'd come from. "Do you want me to look for the rest?" he asks. The air is electric with excitement. Connie mentions this is a great example of Diana's expressive imagery that sets the mood and elevates the tension of the moment. Both he and Brianna are noticing this. Fiona comes in, interrupting as usual. She means well, but she wants a husband.
Well, okay.
Nice.
But digression. What I think about the whole, the air is a light. She also mentions numerous times that she looks like she herself is surrounded by, like, a layer of electricity.
Mm-hmm.
Which,
does that mean she has a fro?
No. I don't think so. But what I'm thinking, what it made me think is that there's so many times throughout the novels where it is alluded to that perhaps there's something otherworldly about Claire.
Mm-hmm.
That this was one of those things that made me think, oh, maybe this is another, like, another otherworldly reference. Mm. That it was, you know, something that was within Claire that was affecting the things around her.
So, just at this point, Fiona comes in, as I said. And she means well, but she wants a husband. That's the crux of Fiona. I wrote, go away, Fiona.
She did, but what touched me on this one... Nobody touched me on this one. What I thought about when I was reading this is that Claire says, that tea is so high, we won't need to eat for weeks. It looks wonderful. And it made me think, is that why the difference between tea and high tea? High tea, there's more food, or...
High tea is definitely more fancy schmance, but it could have been 2 things. I think the way she said it, that tea is so high, almost tongue in cheek, or almost not making fun, but making a comment about how fancy it was, saying, man, that is so fancy. That is so high. We will not be eaten for weeks, or something like that. So, yeah, I think it was an allusion to high tea, but she wasn't saying it is high tea. She's saying, this is so high, girl.
I know that she wasn't saying it was high tea, but the phrasing she used made me think, is that why they call it high tea? Because
maybe
it is a large amount of food.
I don't know if
it's
definitely more fancy and it's more substantial, but I don't know if it's necessarily high as in, like, literally built high up.
Mm-hmm.
I think it's high as in grand. But I could be wrong.
I just thought
please
that was an interesting
know,
turn of
listeners.
Phrase.
Thoughts of marriage to Fiona freaked Roger out.
More, well, she's what, 19?
Well,
she's under 20. I mean, that would freak me out. I mean, he's like in his, what, mid to late 20s? He's a
professor.
Oh,
no, not mid to late. He's like, he was 5 when Claire
disappeared. She was gone 3 years.
That's 8.
That's what I said.
So maybe 28.
That's what I'm saying. He's like late 20s, and this chick is like 19.
Yeah. But
and hot for a husband, especially one who's a learned man, who's got a good job.
Not necessarily, yeah. More of a job than the learned part of it, but yes. Thoughts of marriage to her, as I said, kind of freak him out. We get more description of Brianna.
Also, can we just say, Mrs. Graham was almost like a surrogate mother to him.
Mm.
Can you imagine your surrogate mother's granddaughter basically hitting on you every day?
Like your surrogate sister?
Yes.
Is that a word?
It is now. I'm like, that's got to be totally weird. And like, dude, it's not going to happen. This is weird.
Okay, we get more description of Brianna, which is not only interesting, but it also builds up and then later on hits Roger square center of the eyeballs in later in the chapter.
Well, I mean, for the readers, we were hit over the head in the beginning when they said red hair.
Well,
like,
first chapter. Yeah.
But the more he describes her and the more detailed his descriptions become, the more clear it is that if you weren't convinced already that this was Jamie Fraser's daughter, this is Jamie Fraser's daughter.
So we get... She carried herself like a queen, not slumping as tall girls often do.
As she should. He is the king of men.
But he likens that to Claire. the way that she stands and the way she carries herself. But the waist-length red hair with gold and copper and amber and cinnamon. Dark blue eyes, a wide, generous mouth, a full lower lip. He asked Fiona to do an errand to get her out of the way. And he asked her to go pick up some tobacco. And of course she's like, yes, Roger, whatever I can. And he doesn't even smoke.
I did think it was funny that Diana described her as being a generous mouth with a full lower lip that invited nibbling kisses and biting passion. And I was like, no one ever said that about Jamie. I'm like, would she have written that about Jamie?
Maybe.
I just thought it was weird. I'm like, imagining those same words being written about a man. I don't know if that would have been.
But you also got to look at, even though, yes, Diana's writing it, whose eyes is it, are we looking through? We're looking through Roger's.
I guess, but Claire was a little bit. Claire, a little bit of a saucy lady. She would have thought those things.
Beautiful lips can be on a man, definitely. But beautiful lips are much more associated with a female perspective on things.
Okay. Sexism.
Not perspective. I just totally went against what I was trying to say. With a female. Associated with a female. Claire says yes, that she would like him to look up the rest of the names. And I wrote, ah, Claire the lush. She's very reliable in this. Connie writes, Roger offers whiskey to Claire, who accepts, and to Bree, who declines, making a joke using a Scots burr of the word murder. Roger chokes on his whiskey as he laughs at this, but Claire turns pale. So this is yet more evidence that Claire's a little bit sensitive, a little bit freaked out, hearing this Scottish accent out of her daughter.
Oh yeah, she had gone pale. I just wanted to reread it. Sorry.
I was like, oh, am I wrong? Do I need to delete that?
No, I just wanted to see. No, she did go pale, and yeah, she has tried for how many years
to keep her away,
from all things Scottish, yep. Anything that, and not only for her sake, but for Claire's sake. Claire has been trying so hard for 20 some years now to forget. Mm-hmm. Jamie Fraser, and to have this daughter who is the spitting image of him by her side every day.
Yeah,
you know she looks just like her father, and just seeing her every day is seeing him every day.
Mm-hmm.
So I imagine the Scottish accent hearing the Scottish mouth, accent
she's
was
freaking
from,
out
right? Ooh. Totally.
So they go on about Preston Penns and how the Jacobites never should have won that battle. Roger invites her to go to some of the battle sites, invites Brianna. Brianna knows a heck of a lot more than her mom about the Jacobites. A lot about the history because of her father.
This would not surprise me because Claire has avoided it 100% since she came back.
I mean, she did live it. She definitely doesn't need to look up anymore.
The fact that she's gone to Roger to help her with this is indicative of the fact that she has
no clue.
Eschewed it. She's wants nothing to do with it. She's focused on her medicine and doing the things that she needed to do and taking care of her daughter. She does not want to look back. She's looking forward. And to look back, she doesn't even have the strength to continue to do that. She needs somebody else to do it for her because she's afraid she's going to stumble upon things she doesn't want to hear or read. So, I mean, and Brianna, you know, is oblivious to all of those intricacies and the specificities of it. So she's probably learned a lot more from her father than Claire would have, because her father is obviously very well versed in this time period.
So they have a bite to eat, and then Brianna goes to visit the loo and makes a stink about
She makes a stink in the loo
about the TP. Brianna says she'd hate to see what they'd used for TP back in the day, and Claire says, actually, it wasn't bad. Mullein leaves are really very nice, quite as good as 2-ply bathroom tissue. And in the winter or indoors, it was usually a bit of damp rag. Not very sanitary, but comfortable enough.
I'm
Claire, full on, like, you lost to your place where you were.
No, what I loved about that is that, to me, felt like having a conversation with Diana.
Agreed.
That, to me, was just Diana talking in this book. Because that's kind of the way she is. It's like, you're like, oh, well, what do you think about blah, blah, blah? She's like, oh, well, actually, blah, 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 blah. So that, to me, was like straight out of Diana's mouth. In that moment, Claire was Diana Gabaldon for me.
And that was responded to by blank faces on Roger and Brianna.
Well, naturally so.
They're like, And then she covers it by saying she read it in a book, and that's the safest way to do it, girl.
Right, but that should have also confused Brianna, because as far as Brianna's concerned, she has been doing nothing but medicine for her entire life. It's been a focal point, and it's something that has taken her nights and days.
But does it mean her mom can't read?
I'm not saying she can't read, but let's be honest.
While Brianna's away, Claire tells Roger that there is one place she'd rather him not take her. It's a circle of standing stones, Craignadun. She says she wants to take her there herself, but she's not yet ready. Roger asks Claire about Captain James Fraser, whom he'd found but wasn't on her list. She says she did know about him and that she didn't put his name on the list because he'd died at Culloden, and she seems to know this pretty for sure. Roger says, "Are you sure?"
Forget that. Did you not notice when he said James Fraser and she goes, "I don't want to talk about Jamie Fraser." I didn't put him on the list because I already knew what happened to him. Jamie Fraser died at Culloden. The thing that struck me was that he very clearly stated James Fraser
only.
And she goes, don't talk about Jamie Fraser. I know he died at Culloden, and do not mention him to my daughter.
She is a little bit familiar with someone there.
Are you on a first name basis? She's on much more than a first name basis.
She biblically knows that dude.
Jealous.
Later, he starts to go through the Reverend's things. Fiona again brings him a snack. She says the recipe was given to her by her grandmother, and we learn that she'd died quickly in her sleep. Mrs. Graham.
It's true, but what made me kind of tickled about this, and it made me think about the series, the last episode that they aired before the hiatus, was he's eating biscuits. She's like, "Oh, do you like these? Oh, this is a recipe from my grandmother." And I was like, "Ha ha, remember when he had the whole biscuit scene in the last episode when she gives him a biscuit? You've had your fair share of biscuits, Roger Wakefield."
That's
and
sweet.
I was like, I wonder if it's the same biscuits.
So yes, she's speaking of Mrs. Graham. And this leads to a tender moment with Fiona, which he immediately regrets.
Of course he does. That was so funny because he's like, he just tried to connect with her for just a second.
About her grandmother. Exactly.
Because it's almost a shared...
It is. It's definitely a shared memory.
A shared memory. Not even a shared memory, but a shared person. Like they each have these warm feelings about the same person because, like I said, Mrs. Graham was basically like a mother to Roger. And like not like a grandmother, but her grandmother.
I think it actually was her grandmother's lover.
It actually was. So they're, sharing the loss and missing this woman. And Fiona took it like, "Oh, he likes me." And he's like, "I should not have done that."
He's like, "If I touch her one more time, they're going to be reading the bands."
Exactly. Could you imagine?
No. It's not that he's thinking, "I'm going to marry Brianna." But he knows that Fiona...
He pretty much just said that, actually.
It's not that he's thinking about, "I want to marry Brianna." It's that Fiona is heavily thinking about marrying him, and he is not into that. He doesn't want a part of that. He's like, "If I'm gonna marry somebody, my mind is on Brianna."
Who does that though?
Thinking of wanting to marry somebody?
No, but specifically a girl he's just met. He's like, "If I'm gonna marry anyone, it's gonna be that redhead I met 3 days ago."
Exactly. Well, at least, So he's thinking about marriage to Brianna, Randall, if anyone. And then he sees he's holding an article clipping with Claire's name on it, with the heading, "Returned from the Dead." Dated 20 years ago. She'd disappeared in spring of 1946. Everyone had searched for her, but they had thought she'd potentially been murdered. And in 1948, almost 3 years later, she'd been found, disheveled, dressed in rags, and wandering near the spot she'd disappeared.
Which is a little bit of a deviation from the series. Because in the series, they were telling him, "Dude, she ran off with another man.
Yeah.
We couldn't find a body. She, as far as we know, we
yeah,
think
that's
that
true.
We
and here,
think she's just run off."
Part that I left off, what is said or what is written is that one of the possibilities is that they think she may have been murdered and then the body hidden where it couldn't have been found. They didn't even seem to allow for that in the series.
They didn't allow for the fact that they could have hidden a body they couldn't find. As inept as they were like, "Oh no, we didn't find a body. There was
so
no sign of
no
a struggle. Therefore, there is no body and she ran off with some scalp." And you provided a lovely picture of him. So
when she reappeared, she was disoriented and incoherent. Pictures of Frank after the fact when she's
kind of how
she
appeared in Scotland in the 1740s.
That is true. Pictures of Frank showed him stunned rather than overjoyed at the return of his wife. Roger looks at the photo and couldn't find any trace of Brianna in Frank's face.
Well, of course
face.
He didn't.
Another clipping he saw said, "Kidnapped by fairies, dated May 6th. 1948, and he remembered Claire's statement of Brianna not being at 21. He did the calculation and realized that Claire had indeed returned from her disappearance pregnant. He knew Brianna didn't know. He wondered if Claire had brought her here to tell her or to introduce her to the father. he feels kind of smarmy knowing this. And he likes Claire and he doesn't want to think about her not being faithful to her husband. So it's he feels in a right awkward position. He's like, I did not ask for any of this. And now I've discovered this. And it's just, I can't, and I won't say anything. But he feels very, he just feels very awkward.
It sucks sometimes to be the smartest guy in the room. I mean, when you think about it, knowing more than everyone else in the room can sometimes be awkward.
He goes to take a bath and dresses in the Reverend's robe, which reminds him of him and is very comforting to him, especially because it has his scent. So while waiting for the water to fill the tub, he looks at himself in the mirror and he sees himself as somewhat lanky and he wonders what he'd look like with a beard and long hair and other things that students at the time, other fashions, like an earring or something that students at the time would have. Fiona is outside the door and makes fun of him bathing twice in one day, calls him a dandy. She leaves him towels outside the door, and finally he's in peace.
I always find it interesting how authors choose to show descriptions of their characters. And when you're in...
a bathtub?
Not even a bathtub. No, but when you're... dirty. When you're not in a first person, but you're in a third person, yeah. But you don't have another person in the room...
especially not in the bathtub.
To describe the person that you want to describe, it was very handy that he had a mirror exactly. And chose that moment to kind of check himself out.
Note to self and to Summer, if you ever write anything, a mirror is very handy to show what someone looks like. So he is contemplating Brianna's father. And that Claire does
aren't
not...
aren't we all? I contemplate him daily.
Ha ha. And that Claire doesn't want Brianna going to the Stones, nor for him to mention Jamie Fraser to her. He thinks suddenly that maybe the name James Fraser was the name of Brianna's father from 1947, however.
He's half too smart for his own good. He's just half.
Yes, just half. He thinks of the connection to the Stones and recognizes its attraction, and then has a mental image of Claire and the redhead, because obviously it's got to be a redhead because it ain't Frank. Making love among the Stones. And the image that he describes was so detailed, it shocks the poop out of him.
Okay.
Although he did not defile the bathtub.
No, he didn't. And it didn't shock the poop out of me, but it did remind me a lot of Gaylis Duncan.
Oh.
About how she would scry and use... And it made me think of maybe he was in the still water of the bathtub.
Oh.
And the steam. And maybe he
the
called...
fact that it... The fact that it happened in the water.
Right. And maybe
I wonder how
just,
much light there is.
I know. I'm just saying. Maybe
was it dark?
I don't know. I mean, if I'm taking a bubble bath by myself, it's dark with candles. That's just how I roll.
And music.
Exactly. But I don't know how Roger takes a bath. My point is I don't
and
know
the marbles.
Maybe. I don't know the state of the
that
room.
That could have been really bad. I don't know. But never. I don't.
Stop it. Let me finish.
I'm sorry. I had to hit the marbles out.
I don't know. Were you going to poop them out? Where are you holding these marbles?
What I was saying was I got to take that out because a lady in the bathtub with mood music and lighting and marbles could be a dangerous thing. And then I said I got to take the bit about the marbles out.
You said I got to take the marbles out. Okay.
I know, which is worse.
I know. Okay. But my point is that I don't know the state of the bathroom he was in. I don't know how foggy or dark it was, but it reminded me of Gaylis scrying. And maybe it was like him like summoning that image because it was so detailed that perhaps there's more at work there than just...
And Gaylis was not our only scryer. Remember?
No.
Claire tried it. She... at the end.
Which is so funny. She did try it. Never mind. I can't even say that. It would totally give stuff away.
So yeah, but we had also Claire was scrying at the end of Outlander. So two definite ones that Diana described. And this is interesting. Writers in general, they have reasons for things.
Always.
A few things. Okay. Number one, we wouldn't have known this except that we had Fiona's comment. Two showers or baths, whatever, in one day. That seems like, that seems out of the ordinary for him, or else why would she have remarked upon it, right? Okay, number one. Number two, whether it was one bath or two, or shower, whatever, why did we need to go into the bathroom with him? I'm just saying, we didn't need to, so there must have been a reason Diana wanted him in there, right? Not just to see what he looked like in the mirror. But to contemplate...
That may be the only room in the house with a mirror.
That is... Well, probably not, but maybe. Okay, fine. But forget the mirror. So we have the fact that it's number two. We have the fact... The second time.
You can't say number two and reference a bathroom ever.
We have the fact that it's his second bower or shaft.
I was going to say
shaft. I almost said shaft. We have the fact that it's his second shower or bath. We have the fact that he's in there at all.
Mm-hmm.
And Diana had to have a reason. I don't think it's important that it's his second one, but the fact that it's...
The fact that it's worth mentioning by another character.
Yeah, means that he had to go, even if he didn't...
The whole thing made him feel dirty, Ginger. He just
There's so much I
want to
say that we can't say.
Yet. I know. It Hold sucks on, okay. knowing so much about a book and okay, not being stop. Able to talk about it.
I'm glad you said what you did. So, we have the fact that Diana got him there at all.
Yes.
And we have the fact that Fiona remarked upon it being his second bath or shower of the day. So, it seems that Diana wants us to pay attention to this bathing, or at least to this experience, right?
Or it just is indicative of the fact that Fiona's a nosy biatch.
But Fiona only had to do the towel thing, and then after that, she was gone.
No, but did you notice... Okay, this is a little harkening back. But did you notice that when Brianna and Claire were there, she kept going, Roger, I mean, Mr. Wakefield?
And then she switched it.
And then when she was alone with Roger, yep. she was like, Mr. Wakefield, I mean, Roger.
I'm thinking the natural was Mr. Wakefield, I mean, Roger. And then when they were there, she was trying to maybe push her way in there to say, to let Brianna know that... She called him Roger.
For me, I felt the whole thing was calculated from the beginning to the end. I thought that she was saying, I think the whole thing is a play, like, because she's trying to be presentable to Mr. Wakefield and being like, oh, Mr. Wakefield, I mean, Roger, because you told me I could call you Roger.
And that's and when it's just the two of them.
And then, but when there's company, I totally agree with what you're saying, but I think it's more calculated than that.
I think it's calculated.
Both ends are calculated.
It's no, I'm not disagreeing. I'm saying the only one that I'm remarking upon is when she's doing it in front of Brianna. Claire, I don't think she sees any competition, but Brianna, another young lady, another young woman there, I definitely noticed the way she went back and forth, how she switched it up totally. I thought, oh, that's interesting, but I definitely, and then when I saw the opposite, I didn't think about the second one, but I thought about the first one, and that is her saying, Roger, I mean Mr. Wakefield. Correcting yourself to be more formal gives the hint that you're not normally that formal and thus can tell another female that this is someone whom you're acquainted with.
It's true, but can we just talk about the fact that if Roger wanted her to stop, wanted to just shut it down, all he had to do was be like, call me Mr. Wakefield.
That's true.
Because if he didn't allow Roger in private.
Both ways, yeah.
She would be like, oh, okay, I get it. I mean, I'm not saying she still wouldn't be nosy and try to butt in and be Fiona, but at the same time, I think that if he shut it down, it would be shut down.
Girl, let's get back to the bathtub, because that's doing my head in.
That's
so
where I want to be.
We have, it's his second bath or shower, I think bath, and the fact that he's in there at all, and he goes through, it's almost like a ritual, think about it. He goes and he obviously gets undressed or something to some level. He puts on the Reverend's robe. He goes in, he has everything ready, and then, of course, he doesn't have towels. He gets those from Fiona. But my point is, it's almost like, even though Diana just, like, goes along with it and just doesn't spend too much time on one thing, he is surrounding himself with comfort and memory and childhood but most importantly, comfort. And then he goes in there to get ready to do this, to take a bath. So we had the fact that there's almost like a ritual, but not quite, but almost, you could say maybe a little tiny bit of a ritual, something that made him feel comfortable, and then that he's taken a bath at all, and then that Fiona remarks upon it. So we have all this stuff, we have like arrows pointing toward the bathtub.
But let's take it back just
and
a little.
And to naked Roger.
A little.
Is that too
a little
quick? Differently. Is that too soon?
No. Just okay. Let me take it to a little different skew. I do not have a teenage son. However, I know lots of people who have teenage sons. And they take very long showers.
And they're not scrying.
No, they're not scrying.
Oh, well, Summer, we don't need to talk about that.
I'm not going to go any further than that. I'm just saying that perhaps it's one of the few places that he has privacy in a house that Fiona has taken over.
Well, yeah, and you don't even need to go, and I'm not saying you were saying this, but...
I mean, I was saying that.
She was. But you don't even need to go to that topic to say exactly what you just said. This is the Rev's house, the Reverend's house... And Fiona, who is definitely helpful, cooks, cleans, whatever, laundry, she's just everywhere. And this is the only place, I agree with you, where he can get that privacy. And he does say he is going to go, once he gets all situated, he says, now that I know that Fiona's gone, I can think more clearly. So it's definitely to get away from her. And that's kind of a benefit of it. But you have this, I'm going to do it again, a little bit of a ritual surrounding himself in this thing that he's comfortable in. You have
I think he's
the
just,
fact that he's going to take a bath and then his second bath.
I think she does his laundry and he doesn't want her to find crusty tube socks. I'm just saying that.
What do tube socks do with anything?
Really? Crusty tube socks. What would you? What's a tube sock perfectly sized for?
Your foot. Well, it's crusty. If you wear socks too many times, they get crusty.
Oh my god!
So we have all of this stuff happening or not happening, and Diana is setting this up, or all these arrows pointing towards this bath, right? Seems like an entire scene. Now, granted, it could be just for him to, again, have privacy and think, because he hasn't been able to think. He's been trying to do this research with Fiona coming in, coming out, and he's like, I need to be alone and to be able to think about things more clearly. However, it is so interesting, and we don't know about the light or the music, but we don't know about the lighting. You're right. So we have this very almost subliminal setup. You don't have it. It doesn't seem obvious. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. He's taking a bath. He's comfortable. He's getting a little bit of privacy, and he wants to think things out. That's very reasonable. But after I said, he has this almost too real, too vivid image of Claire and her redheaded beau
doing it,
knocking boots.
Who somewhere says that?
The 80s.
The 90s.
Somewhere, oh, in the 90s. The 90s say that. Somewhere, he didn't say in the middle, but somewhere in that ring of stones. In those stones.
Yes.
And so, and it shocks him. I don't think it makes him afraid, but it shocks him, the vividness, the detailed imagery that he's seeing.
Yeah.
So much so that he's like, I don't know if I can look Claire in the face next time I see her. That's wackadoodle.
I can't look my book in the face the next time I read it.
So, I'm glad that Summer said that, because you're absolutely right. The two other times that I remember from Outlander that we had someone who was doing scrying on purpose were Galis in her attic room.
Yes.
And Claire at the Abbey trying to save Jamie's soul.
But can we talk about the fact that Roger took a bath? Do you know any dudes that take baths?
In the 1940s? Probably a lot of dudes.
Really?
Did they have showers?
It wasn't the 40s. It was the 60s.
Oh, sorry.
Come on now. Get your centuries straight.
That has to come at my centuries?
Decades.
My decades? Wow. Okay, tit for tat, girl.
Get your decades straight. But can we talk about the fact that Roger was taking a bath? How many dudes do you know take baths? I'm just saying, I mean, even in the 60s, showers were much more, you know. I don't know anyone now who, I don't take baths. Like,
it's a time thing.
It's a time suck, and I'm honestly, I'm skeeved out by my jacuzzi bath.
So, just saying, his intent does not seem, we have no evidence that he wanted, oh, maybe we do, inadvertent evidence, or unofficial evidence. I was about to say, we don't have any evidence that he wanted to scry, obviously, right? However, he wanted to have a clear mind and think about things, and what is scrying if not trying to think about things and find an answer? Which, Summer, you're freaking me out here, girl. No one has ever...
Oh my god, did I just Pentecost your ass? Because you Pentecosted me earlier.
Today?
Nope. When you Pentecosted me.
Oh, for real? Let's not use that word as a verb.
It sounds like all I hear is a cost in the middle of it.
A cost. I don't know, but, well, I have been surprised by listeners' comments, by things you've said, by things I've said. So, what does that mean? I don't even know. This is like, this chapter has turned into something that's kind of rocking my world now. So, we have someone.
Oh my god, I just became the brainy one.
We're all thinking about different things. That's
I
why
know.
We need.
I'm
that's
never
why it's
the brain.
Good to have.
I just not, became the brain.
It's not about brainy. It's about perspective.
It is, but I feel like I just became the brainy one. Can just let me have it.
It's not about brainy, but
just tell me I'm brainy.
Summer, it's not about brainy.
Ginger, just say it.
No, because it's not about brainy.
Just say it.
It's
why won't you say it?
So he has this very strong imagery, and he doesn't appear to have gone into that bathroom to want it to scry, but who knows? There was water.
I mean,
there was really strong imagery.
But I don't think he would have even thought about that. Like,
oh, of course not. But I'm not talking about him. We're talking about Diana, and that's why I love what you said.
Okay.
Him having such a vivid mental image of Claire knocking boots with her Highland lover, redhead lover, somewhere in those stones, around the stones.
I mean, I have those images in my head all the time.
Of your Highland lover?
Of my Highland lover.
Or Claire and her Highland lover.
Well, now it's Claire and her Highland lover, but before the show it was, you know, me and my Highland lover, but now
so,
I'm, you know, adjusting.
He thinks about, he's being very, I won't say snarky, he's being very kind of glib, saying, you know, oh my gosh, what am I going to say the next time I see Brianna? He rolls a few things off of his top of his head or off of his tongue. And the last thing he says is, "Hey, Brianna, do you know you're illegitimate?" And I was like, yeah, of course that's what you're going to ask her.
That's the worst way to send that to somebody, by the way. Nobody should say that. If you have a friend and they're possibly illegitimate, that's not the way you need to broach that. I'm just going to put that out there. That's my PSA for the day.
So we basically get the point, if we didn't get it till now, that he likes Brianna a lot, a lot, a lot.
I mean, it started in the last chapter where he was like, I just want to be a knight and lay it at her feet and bring this information to her.
Yes, but it started with a ding dong. And by that, I mean a doorbell.
I was like, wait, what? What okay. I loved about, there was some really nice description. I loved the imagery of him putting on Reverend Wakefield's robe,
mm-hmm.
and just how it just felt, you know, yeah, just like, it felt like home putting that mm-hmm. like robe on. And I feel that way. Like I don't buy a lot of clothes, but I buy clothes for myself and they're fine and they're, you know, whatever, they get the job done, but there's nothing that will ever replace how it felt to be a kid and putting on my dad's bathrobe. Because it just totally feels totally different. Because the bathrobe, it smelled like my dad. It was like, he'd worn it. It was comfy. It was big. And it was just something that he'd been wearing for God knows how long. And I, honest to God, he probably still has this bathrobe. I don't know. But there's just something about that
old blue one.
That blue bathrobe that always just would strike me. And it made me think of that blue bathrobe when Roger was describing putting this silk robe on from the Reverend, which it just struck me as being, I just know what that feeling is like. And I mean, I'm sure most people probably have something that's kind of similar.
I'd buy that.
For a dollar?
So, toward the end, we get more description of really how much he did like Brianna, and that he, although it made him feel very awkward, he decided to go ahead and keep his promise to Claire and not say anything. But he did decide, as Diana writes, he would, quote, be there to pick up the pieces. Which I thought was, for just having met someone.
I was going to say, that's a lot of commitment.
That's manning up for something that you'd have no responsibility for. But it's nice. It's nice of him.
And we all know he's totally digging into Brianna, but I wonder how much of it goes back to perhaps Frank. Because Frank, he knew Frank. He doesn't associate Frank with Claire and Brianna because they didn't ever come back. But Frank appeared to be somebody who was present in their lifetime. And if you go by strictly the series, you'd see that he probably does remember Frank from when he was young.
Mm-hmm.
And Frank was spending a lot of time with the Reverend and Mrs. Graham. So, I mean, maybe he kind of feels the same way Claire does, where he's trying to honor the memory of Frank and to be there to help in whatever way he can. And if that means it's just picking up the pieces, then it's just picking up the pieces.
Sometimes so basically, that's all you can be. He's foreseeing some possible fallout, whatever that is, right?
Of course there's going to be a fallout. She's clearly not Frank's daughter. Everyone knows now. Not everyone. Everyone but Brianna knows now.
Yeah.
Everyone who's important in the structure of the book at this point.
Number one, he likes her. Number two, he knows this secret that he's like 99.9% sure he is correct on. Finds evidence before he can make his conclusions. And he can't tell the one person that this thing that all the signs are pointing to affects the most.
No, and can you think about it? It's like when you meet somebody and you're interested in them and you want to have that connection with them and you're like, I have this information. If I tell them this, I would have that instant connection with them. Like I would be that guy who like was always honest with them and always told them everything and being like, no, I can't do that. Because A, I don't want to be the guy that'll drop that knowledge on her. And B, I don't want to be the guy that drops that knowledge on her because then I don't want to be the bad connotation with it.
That's good. So he likes her and he says he'll be there to pick up the pieces. So after what you just said, that makes me think, okay, three things. He likes her. He's not going to tell Claire's secret, or he will keep that to himself. And he decides if and when it comes down and he's around this mess or around the results of it, he will pick up the pieces. So to me, that says that it's going to obviously have to come from Claire. And, well, I mean, honestly, it's not his story to tell.
It's not.
You know, and all he's going to do is not only alienate Brianna at that point,
exactly.
But he's going to piss Claire off.
Exactly. So, number one, it's not his thing to tell. And number two, I'm not saying he's thinking this way, although you could read into his words, I'll be there to pick up the pieces. You could make an argument for this, although I don't think that's his shtick. I don't think that's his line in there, his thing. But by staying out of it and by keeping the confidence for Claire and by not being the one, by knowing, by him keeping that secret, the benefit is he's not going to be the one who shatters her illusions, who shatters her world. And if he is the one, she will never allow him to be there to pick up the pieces because she doesn't want anything to do with that. But if he knows about it, one of the side effects, I guess you could say, of him not being that person to break that is that he can be there to be the one.
No, it's true. Whoever tells her is going to be on her SHIT list.
That is true.
For sure. I mean,
her shiz list.
Yeah. The person who lays that knowledge on her she's not going to believe it at first. Mm-hmm. She's going to be like, why would you say that? She's going to be angry. And then it's like those seven stages of grief. And she's going to go through all of those. And I promise you, whoever lays that knowledge on her is going to be the person who is the focal point of almost all of those stages. Mm. So, yeah, no, he's doing the right thing by staying out of it. All he can do to really help Brianna on the journey she doesn't know she's on is to basically just kind of help Claire facilitate it. But it's not his news to tell her. It's not his business at this point. So he's doing the right thing, I think.
Yeah. So I got to say, two that I can remember off the top of my head. You may have said more things that made me kind of go, whoa. But definitely the whole bathtub, a.k.a. scrying bowl.
The scrying tub?
The scrying tub. There you go. And then not only is him keeping his word to Claire, allowing him a benefit of being there to be able to be the one. Number one, he likes her, so he wants to be around her, but it kind of is self-serving. And I don't think that he's a self-serving person, but him, because, okay, think about it, right? If you know something about someone, even though you have confidence, you're like, yeah, it's a very awkward situation, but he really truly does not know these people. He doesn't. And so it truly isn't his place. I agree with him on that. But if there's someone you like, if this is related to what he's part of his reasoning at all, he's thought this through a lot. I didn't think he thought it that far. I just thought, from what the words were, I just thought, it's not my place. It's very awkward, but it's not my place. I'll keep my word to Claire. And you know what? If something does happen, I'm definitely there because he likes her. I'm there to help her. I never thought that part of that decision making, and maybe it wasn't, may have been a little bit self-serving. Not in a mean way.
No, and I don't think it's an anti-Claire self-serving thing. Oh, but no. I think that for sure.
No, it's a pro-Roger
self-serving thing. No, absolutely. But being the bearer of that bad news, everyone always say don't shoot the messenger, but they always shoot the messenger.
You always get something.
No, you, and if nothing else, it delays the outcome you want by being the messenger. So it really behooves him to say nothing and just to be ready to be that shoulder she needs
to be
when the shit hits the fan.
He wants to be.
That he's been trying to lay stuff at her feet since the beginning. So it's lovely.
Yes. So that was that chapter read. No.
Okay. It was a long chapter to begin with.
That chapter discussion.
It was a long chapter to begin with.
Yes, it was. And turned in a little more interesting. My notes were pretty much just like a restatement of stuff and a little bit of insight. Not too much. Just kind of making notes for myself that, okay, we saw more of what she looks like. We saw a little bit more of what he looks like. We saw Claire's reactions to some of the things he says. We saw her twice. That's the third thing that you did tonight or mentioned about this chapter. We saw her in her reply about certain things that Robert found. Who the hell's Robert?
Bruce.
In her reply to certain things that Roger was telling her about what he'd found, she jumps from James to Jamie. I mean, she's letting a few things out, and we're getting a picture. And then, of course, the things that Robert...
Oh, my... Stop it. I don't know a Robert, so no, I don't have a baby on the mind. And then in some of those articles that Roger found, articles about her after her coming back from her disappearance, yes. all of this stuff and him putting those pieces together. So the one thing that he didn't pick up on, and I understand, I mean, he picked up on it, but not in the way that would have been really truly meaningful, because obviously he's a historian, he doesn't believe in like fairy tales and fairy stories. But the one thing out of everything he read was that line or that title about returning from being amongst the fairies, something along that line. Because mm-hmm. those articles that he doesn't read them, but the articles never mention the stones. The articles mention her being found in the area she disappeared in or near, which we know is at the stones, but they don't mention the stones. But the one article that mentioned the word fairies as kind of a teaser, right? To try and bring someone in to read this article about someone who had disappeared.
Well, she's the only one who mentions the stones. And the yes. only reason he even thinks about the stones for more than like 10 seconds is the fact that she's like, don't take her there.
Yes.
And then he's like, oh, that was a popular trysting spot. I yes. took many a lass up there. He makes a connection. And uh-huh. I was always successful.
And I have to go take a bath so I can think on this.
Right. And scry.
And scry. So, yeah. Basically, what I'm doing now is just rehashing everything we just said. But it's just that is so I am like into that. That sounds really weird. I am very curious about this scrying tub now. So guys, I'm going to keep my eyes out.
I just need everyone to acknowledge the fact that I just blew Ginger's mind
a little bit.
Enough that I feel like I did something extra special tonight. So
oh, it was very interesting.
It just doesn't happen. I just need that to be on the record. But that's where so, we're going to end.
That was chapter 2.
On our next read along, so the next chapter we will be covering is chapter 3, entitled Mothers and Daughters.
Thank you so much for listening. We look forward to our next episode.
Visit our website at www.outlanderpod.com. Follow us on Twitter at @outlanderpod. Find us on Facebook at facebook.com/outlanderpod or email us at outlanderpod@gmail.com.
I dreamt it last night that my young